Sabil with Radio Tacoma. And that's my friend Flicka joining the conversation on the Dog Aging Project. Now, if you have a dog, or if you intend to grow older, you may want to join us too to find out more about research into aging. I'm talking with Matt Kaeberlein, PhD, co-director of the Dog Aging Project. Matt is a professor of pathology and director of the Healthy Aging and Longevity Research Institute at the University of Washington. Harmony Peraza is a registered veterinary technician and is the study participant manager for the Dog Aging Project. The goal of the Dog Aging Project is to understand how genes, lifestyle, and environment influence aging. They want to use that information to help dogs and people increase health span, which is the period of life spent free from disease. And I have a ton of questions for Matt and Harmony.
I got a little fact sheet, and from what I understand, says that the Dog Aging Project is the most ambitious canine science initiative in the world. And that's pretty impressive.
I was just going to say, it's certainly true that we are ambitious at the Dog Aging Project. So this really started about 5 or 6 years ago, at least from my involvement in the project, through conversations that I had with Daniel Promislow, who is also at the University of Washington and is co-director of the Dog Aging Project, where he had been interested in the idea that pet dogs, because they age so much more rapidly than people, can really teach us a lot about the underlying biological aging process. And so through a series of conversations with Daniel and Kate Creevy, who's our lead veterinarian, and she's at Texas A&M, we decided to form this thing called the Dog Aging Project to really try to understand what are the most important factors that determine health and longevity in pet dogs.
One of the things that I've been wondering is, they talk about healthy aging, and to me, that seems like an oxymoron.
Sure. So I actually am trying not to use that phrase as much anymore. I think maybe a better way to think about it is older individuals of normal health status, because you're absolutely right that what is normal health for a particular age, say a 70-year-old, is not the same as what we consider normal health for a 30-year-old. And it's clear that for any individual, when you're 70 years old, your organs and tissues aren't functioning as well as they did when you were 30 years old. And so we really want to understand, what are the factors, both genetic and environmental, that cause that decline in function that goes along with the aging process, with the hope that by understanding what aging is at the cellular and molecular level, that we can actually intervene to delay those declines and really push back the diseases of aging as far as possible. And in dogs, the same aging process takes place as in people. It just happens about 7 to 10 times faster. And so we believe that there's a real opportunity to understand in a very detailed way what the biological mechanisms of aging are in pet dogs to enhance the healthy longevity of pet dogs. And hopefully some of what we learn about aging in dogs will apply equally well to human aging and can be used to improve health and longevity in people.
Correct me if I'm wrong, because I've gotten a couple of different places for information, but I heard that this is going to be like a 10-year study, so you're going to be following these dogs for 10 years?
Right. So we are funded by a grant from the National Institute of Health, specifically the National Institute on Aging, and those grants are five-year grants. So that's just the typical grant cycle for an NIH grant. It is our hope and expectation that grant will get renewed for another five-year cycle. And I think ultimately we would really like to see this study go on indefinitely, whether that's through ongoing NIH funding or philanthropic funding. But certainly if we're able to really follow dogs for 10 years, that's a substantial portion of most dogs' lifespans. So, you know, a big dog typically may live 8 or 9 years. A smaller dog may live 15 to 18 years. So that's a pretty significant portion of a dog's lifespan. And so by following dogs for 10 or 15 years, that allows us to really, over that time, understand what are the factors that are associated with different health outcomes late in life. And so, you know, I think one important thing to consider is that a 10-year study in dogs is roughly equivalent to a 70-year study in people. So again, the accelerated rate of aging in dogs makes it much more feasible to really identify these relationships that are associated with health outcomes during aging.
So how is this study structured?
Right. So I'll let Harmony talk a little bit about how we're engaging with the owners. What I'll say is, you know, we are recruiting owners to nominate their dogs to participate in the study. And there are really two major components to the dog aging project. The largest component is what we call a longitudinal study of aging. Our hope is that will eventually include up to 100,000 dogs. And so the idea there is really just, as we've talked about, to follow dogs throughout their lives and understand, you know, what are the factors that really determine health and longevity. A smaller component of the dog aging project, but in my view, equally important, is to really start to try to intervene to extend healthy lifespan in dogs with some of the strategies that we know about from the basic science that are able to slow aging in laboratory animals. Harmony, do you want to talk a little bit about how owners are being recruited and engaged with in the study?
Yes, absolutely. Dr. Kaeberlein, thank you. We have a website. It's really great. It's dogagingproject.org. And interested dog owners can go on to dogagingproject.org, read up on some great points about the project, and they can actually nominate their dog directly from the website by clicking a bright purple button that says nominate your dog here. There's a few short questions to follow, and then their canine companion is officially nominated. You know, they are able to nominate one canine companion per household, and within a handful of weeks, these participants will be invited to their personal portal where a lot of fun happens. They will take part in a longer, more in-depth survey about themselves and their dogs, their lifestyle, environment, their dog's medical history, and everything in between. What do they do for fun? How many, you know, walks a week does your dog go on? We utilize this survey to get a very good feel of the individual canine companion's lifestyle. And the participants who complete this survey will be official Dog Aging Project PAC members, complete with an official enrollment number. It's very exciting. My German Shepherd is number 297. So I understand there is a lot of pride in that. And so we're just very excited about this project. Because dogs incite such passion just due to their loyalty, unconditional love, what makes this so fantastic to take, you know, to be a part of, is that we learn so much from dogs, not only what we can learn from biological samples and what we learn on these surveys, but just the way to live our lives. I mean, unconditional love, keep life simple, you know, enjoy every moment. And the participants that our team gets to engage with, they appreciate these characteristics of dogs. So being able to regularly communicate with all of our fantastic participants and hear their stories about their canine companions and the happy times, the sad times, everything in between, it's really an honor. We are a very enthusiastic team, and we're very excited to this invitation to the puppies, you know, the middle-aged dogs and the elderly dogs. You know, we need to learn from a range of these fantastic family members, the dogs that are working dogs, the couch potato dogs, and everyone in between. You know, even as specifically as, you know, the spayed and neutered dogs, but even dogs that are not spayed or neutered. We need to learn from such a broad cross-section of these special special family members that we're just asking everyone to go on to dogagingproject.org, nominate your dog, and you're going to hear from us in a handful of weeks.
Well, that's really cool. So how many dogs are you hoping to enroll in this?
So there's really no upper limit. Originally, the goal was to enroll 10,000 dogs into what we call the foundation group. Every dog in the foundation group will have its genome sequenced in addition to the survey data that Harmony mentioned and veterinary medical records. But in the larger Dog Aging Project pack, my hope is that we'll eventually get to 100,000 dogs. We've got about 15,000 members of the pack right now. The survey data itself is already proving to be very interesting and informative. So I'm extremely excited about the information that we're already getting. And we're really just at the very beginning. Even though the Dog Aging Project has been actively engaged, we were funded about 2 years ago. A lot of that time has been spent building the infrastructure to allow us to enroll owners and dogs into the project. And so we're just now starting to get the first data coming in. And the Health and Life Experiences Survey is sort of the owner's first interaction with the Dog Aging Project once you've nominated your dog. And that tells us information about the dog's environment, its home, are there other pets, what sort of diet does it eat, as well as information about its health history. And so just from that, we're already learning a lot about the frequency of different diseases, for example, that happen during aging. Many of them look very much like what we see with aging in people, but there are some interesting examples where that may not be the case. And so I think we're already, just from the survey information, starting to get a lot of insights. So that's the pack. The foundation, as I mentioned, is 10,000 dogs. And then there's a higher resolution group, which we call the precision group, where those owners will bring their dogs to their private veterinarian once a year. And we will get additional information about the microbiome, so the bacteria that live in the gut microbiome, metabolites in the blood and blood chemistry that will allow us to identify in much more detail some of the biology that's happening during the aging process in dogs. Those dogs will come in once a year and we'll get that sort of higher resolution data from 1,000 dogs every year.
It seems to me that you're looking for a lot of dogs, but there's a nomination process. So are there certain dogs that you're looking for or certain dogs that you are weeding out of this study?
So Harmony made a really good point, which is that we really want the diversity of dogs. So we want all breeds, mixed breed dogs, puppies, middle-aged dogs, older dogs, big dogs, small dogs, couch potatoes, active dogs. That diversity is really important because, again, the goal is to understand what the different factors are, both environmental and genetic. And under environment, that includes diet and activity and where they live, suburban, rural, urban. We want to capture all of that diversity so that we can really understand what are the most important factors that determine how healthy a dog is as it goes through its life and into old age. And from the perspective of human health, again, you know, this is as much about dog health as it is about human health. But certainly one of our goals is to learn what might be important for human aging. This diversity that dogs have is a really nice parallel to human diversity. If you think about the human environment, you know, maybe with the exception of pet cats, it's hard to imagine an animal that shares the human environment as much as our dogs do. And so that capturing that diversity within the human environment is one of the major goals of the Dog Aging Project. So we want all comers, I think is the way to say it. We want dogs of all shapes and sizes living in all sorts of different environments.
You mentioned getting the genome of each dog. Are you looking for related dogs like siblings or, you know, looking towards recruiting some breeders?
That's a good question. So one of the decisions that we made early on was that we would limit the number of dogs from any household to one. I know lots of us have multiple dogs and we love all of our dogs and we would like them all to participate in a study like this, but we're asking owners to pick one. And there are a variety of reasons for that. Maybe the easiest way to think about it is that if you have more than one dog in the same house, that makes complications in the data that can bias the analysis because it becomes enriched for certain certain things if you have more than one dog sharing the same environment. So in that respect, we are not studying siblings directly, although I guess it is certainly possible that two dogs from the same litter could end up in different households and both be part of the study. There are some quite powerful types of analysis that can be done on closely related individuals, but we made the decision that that wasn't going to be at least a focus of the study for now. So we're really much more interested in capturing, as I mentioned, the diversity of dogs rather than trying to pick closely related dogs. We are also at this point not trying to enrich for specific breeds. So we haven't approached specific breed groups, for example, to try to focus on individual breeds. We certainly have considered it, and that might be something that we do in the future. The one area where we are trying to select for a specific population of dogs is what we call the centenarian cohort. So centenarian typically refers to humans who live more than 100 years. Obviously, we're not looking for dogs that are 100 years old. But the idea here is we're interested in dogs that are exceptionally long lived for their body size or their breed type. So for example, a 20-year-old German Shepherd would be a centenarian dog because it's very rare that you would ever see a German Shepherd live that long, right? So we're trying to identify dogs that are exceptionally long lived. And then we will sequence their genomes at very high resolution. 30X sequencing is what we call it. But that just means that we're really digging deep into the genetic information of these exceptionally long-lived dogs with the idea that there might be certain genes or certain variants in the DNA that are causing them to be exceptionally long-lived. And our hope is that we can identify some candidates that are hypothesis generating. And this same kind of approach has been taken in human centenarians and have led to specific genes that people hypothesize are causal for exceptional longevity in people. So obviously it would be really interesting if we found the same genes being associated with exceptional longevity in dogs.
Oh, yeah. Well, one question that occurred to me is that with the dogs that are participants, the way that they become participants is through your website, and that they are required to go through some hoops and whatnot. Anyways, that they would need to have veterinary care and a veterinary record and all of that kind of thing. And there are a lot of dogs in our society that don't fit that. There are a lot of people that have no homes, they have no access to computers, but they still have their dogs. And I don't know if that is anything that would skew the study.
So I think that's a really good point. And this is something that we talk a lot about, is expanding the socioeconomic status of the owners, right? And that's not obviously not the only thing that can contribute to what you brought up, but I think that's a big part of it. So certainly we are able to get pretty good representation from rural, suburban, and urban environments, which are, and that's a big part of the diversity, but we are definitely underrepresented right now for, I think, the lower socioeconomic status owners and their dogs. And that's something that we are actively working on and engaging with different communities. So I think diversity among the owner population is something that is important to us to expand in the future. Now, whether that will impact the scientific validity of the conclusions, I think it's a little bit hard to know. So we're most interested in the fundamental mechanisms of aging. And so I think if we can capture a breadth of genetic backgrounds, which so far, it looks like we've been really successful at that. We've got a lot of diversity of different breeds, a lot of mixed breed dogs. I think we're pretty successful on the dog genetics. And so then the question is, how important is the environmental diversity that we might be lacking with dogs that maybe don't get regular veterinary care or maybe aren't able to have a particularly nutritious diet? So it's an unknown to us at this point. We're doing everything we can, really, though, to make the burden as low as possible for the owners. And in fact, I should clarify something that maybe it wasn't clear before, which is that to be part of the Dog Aging Project PAC, the largest group of dogs, the one that we would like to get, 100,000 dogs, the dogs don't actually have to see the veterinarian. we would like them to provide veterinary medical records if they're able to, but that's not a requirement to be part of the pack. Really, the only requirement there is that the owner is able to nominate their dog through the website, which, as Harmony mentioned, is we've made it as easy as possible for people to do that. So it does require internet access, but that's really it. And then they complete a survey questionnaire. So hopefully that bar is relatively low, and that will allow us to get as much diversity as possible in the Dog Aging Project pack. The last thing I'll mention is we are exploring options in the future to be able to facilitate owners who may not be able to afford regular veterinary care to bring their dog into the veterinarian through some sort of subsidized mechanism where we can help pay for the cost of the veterinary care.
Wow. This is an incredibly ambitious project. I am impressed.
Well, you know, I think, as Harmony mentioned, everybody on the team loves dogs. And so you're right. It's ambitious. It's a lot of work, but it's also a lot of fun because it's something that we're all passionate about. And I think Harmony certainly could talk about, you know, the fun of engaging with the owners, which is a big part of our community relations. So I think it makes it easy to be ambitious and work hard when it's something that you're also excited and passionate about.
Oh, that's so good to hear, because that goes right into my personal motto, which is, if it's not fun, you're not doing it right. Again, I love dogs. I've always had dogs. I love cats too, but dogs actually have a very different purpose in my life. But then when I think about scientific studies, it seems to me that a lot of these projects, especially if they're looking at aging, use much shorter lived animals, you know, mice and rats and rabbits and, you know, those sorts of animals that whose their environment can be completely controlled. So did you start there or why not?
Right. So that's a really good question. And you're absolutely right. So the vast majority of studies in the field of aging research use laboratory animals. Some of them are very simple animals like fruit flies or nematode worms that live, you know, a few weeks to a couple of months, or mice, which live about 3 years in the laboratory. And the power of those models is that you can control almost everything. You can control the environment in a very precise way. You can control the genetics in a very precise way and do very specific studies in that context. Of course, what you lose in those studies is the variation that is the real world. And so in many ways, that is, in my view, one of the most powerful aspects of the Dog Aging Project, is that it allows us to step out of the laboratory and really study aging in an animal that has the genetic and environmental diversity that people do, but still ages rapidly enough that we can get answers in a reasonable time frame. So, you know, as I mentioned, NIH grants are typically 5-year grants. And so a 5-year period in a medium to large size dog life is about half of their lifespan. That's kind of the same as 5 decades or so in a person. So you can capture a lot of information about the changes that occur biologically over that time frame, in a time frame that is amenable to scientific study. And, you know, part of being amenable to scientific study is to be fundable. So it fits the time frame for NIH grants. So dogs, in many ways, are the perfect balance, in my view. And we can be guided by the studies that have been done previously in laboratory animals, in worms and flies and mice. And we can ask how much of what we've learned in those organisms in a very controlled laboratory environment actually applies in the real world. And I think that's an unknown at this point. So that's one of the things that we'll be able to accomplish in the Dog Aging Project, is to understand, you know, which aspects that seem to be really important for aging in the laboratory are actually important for aging in the real world in dogs. And I think those aspects of aging that are shared between the laboratory and the real world will be pretty good candidates for having a big role in human aging and health late in life. So in many ways, I think dogs are almost the perfect bridge between the laboratory and human health.
Yes, and it seems like that bridge includes the environment, because the dogs that are being nominated are living with the humans. And so they're sharing a lot of their environment, maybe not entirely, but sunlight, the pollution, the sometimes even diet. And so I'm wondering how that kind of information, that environmental information, can relate right back to humans also.
Yeah, so I think you're right. So in almost every way, diet being perhaps the one obvious exception, dogs share the most important features of the human environment. And we are tracking all of that. So as I mentioned, there's the Health and Life Experiences Survey, which will ask the owners questions about the dog's environment, including how much time do they spend outside in a typical day, what specific diet they're eating. And then we will also, based on zip code information, have information about air quality, water quality. So most people don't give their dog bottled water, which means the dog is drinking tap water. So water quality is probably an important component over the lifespan of a dog. So we'll be able to start to identify relationships between some of these factors and health outcomes later in life. I think diet is a really interesting area. So even though dogs don't typically eat a human diet, dogs do have a pretty high diversity of diets across all of the dogs that are out there. And, you know, there's a lot of information available on the internet about, you know, different diets in dogs. People are quite passionate about certain diets in dogs, and that is almost completely based on a lack of data. There is really very little good data on what is the healthiest diet for dogs, assuming that there is one diet that's healthiest for all dogs. So I hope that that's one of the questions that we'll be able to answer that will be very relevant for veterinary care and for pet owners. Is there a strong relationship between the different types of popular diets that are out there and how healthy a dog is likely to be later in life? Is a raw food diet or a kibble diet or a wet canned food diet better? Or are they all more or less the same? Maybe they don't have a big effect on health outcomes. We really don't know. And so I think we'll be able to, you know, in a few years, at least say what the association is. The other point I will make that I think is important for people to understand is the longitudinal study is all correlation, right? So all we can really say is this particular genetic or environmental feature is correlated with this health outcome later in life. Maybe it's a specific risk of a disease like cancer. Maybe it's maintaining activity or cognitive function better later in life. But they're all going to be correlations. And I think it's really important for people to keep in mind and understand correlation is not causation. And so we view the longitudinal study as hypothesis generating rather than proving hypotheses. So I think that's really, really important for people to recognize that, you know, while the correlation may be quite strong, it doesn't necessarily mean that if you give your dog this specific diet, that it's going to age more slowly. That will require future studies. And really the gold standard for testing causality are placebo-controlled clinical trials.
Yeah, so this is going to make a big jump-off point for so many studies in the future.
Yeah, and I would just like to add to that that not only is it going to be a jump-off point for, we hope, for many veterinary clinical trials and medical studies, everybody on the Dog Aging Project went into this committed that this would be an open science project. So our intention is to make all of the data that we collect available to the scientific community and to the extent possible available to the general public in a way that people can understand. We think that's extremely important because we recognize that our team is not going to be able to do all of the types of analyses that are possible with the data that we're collecting and that would be valuable. And we want to make the data broadly available so that other smart people with good ideas can get access to that data and do their own studies. And so that is something that we think, we hope is going to address that one. But it's great that we all have German Shepherds. So Harmony, you've got a German Shepherd, right?
My guy's a retired canine officer, and he's 11 years old now. So he's just a big joy in my family's life. And Yes, Louisa, thank you for asking, you know, in your particular case, which, you know, perhaps which pup to nominate. And of course, we, whenever it comes to our wonderful cohort of participants, we can't directly make recommendations, but we can offer certain guidelines to keep in mind. And there's one simple one. The more we know about your dog, the better that is. The more information that you can provide about your companion's life, that would be what we would recommend. That would be the dog that we would recommend you nominate. Now, there are a lot of households that have dogs with a limited knowledge of the history on, and that is okay too. Just because a participant does not have a lot of history on their dog, we still want those dogs to participate. But if there is a multi-dog household, one guideline to go by is if one of the two, there's a bit more knowledge of the dog's entire life, then perhaps the participant would want to go that direction with the dog with a more known history.
Yeah, because that makes a lot of sense. Okay, so I have a one-year-old dog, which means that, and she's a Belgian Tavern, and they usually live 10, 12 years. And so in 10 or 12 years, I'm probably going to be in my mid-80s. But if I die before my dog, then how would that affect her position in the study?
Do you want to tackle that one, Harmony, or should I?
Sure. Well, I have a couple of thoughts, but I would love for you to go first, Dr. Caberline.
Well, I mean, I think it depends on the specific situation, right? So if, for example, I mean, this is all hypothetical, right? But you can imagine that certainly there will be dogs in our study whose owners pass away. If there is a designated person who will take that dog, whether it's a spouse or a child, then, and that person wants to continue in the study, from our perspective, we absolutely want the dog to stay in the study. And so there would be no challenge associated with that, aside from probably within our system, changing the email address and the credentials for the owner portal. I think from our perspective, what we anticipate more as the challenge for us is cases where the person who takes on care of the dog no longer wants to participate in the study. And that certainly is understandable that could be the case. And so from our perspective, then the data for that dog in the future is lost, which is unfortunate, right? I mean, because every dog in our study is immensely valuable, but we also will have what we call cross-sectional time points. So even when dogs, you know, start in the study, let's say when they're young, let's say a one-year-old dog comes into the study and then only is in the study until it's five. At each of those annual time points where we collect survey information and in some cases, veterinary information, we will be able to do a cross-sectional analysis. And all that really means is an analysis of the group of dogs in the study at that time point. And so there's still value from our perspective for dogs that are only in the study for part of their lives, because they will still go through changes, even if it's only for a couple of years, that could potentially be informative for relationships between environment or genetics that are important for health outcomes.
And Harmony, did you have something to add?
You know, Dr. Caberline really did cover the point that I wanted to make, and it was the point that he made about the pet transitioning to a new home and it being up to that new owner as to whether or not they wanted to carry on the project or if they decided not to. So he definitely covered it all there.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know that this was ever, that I ever mentioned this, but for all of the dogs in the pack, every year we will ask the owners to update the health and life experiences survey. So if there has been a major change in that dog's environment over the intervening year, we hope to capture that information through this annual survey mechanism. And so I think, you know, in cases like that, that could actually turn out to be really interesting and informative. You certainly could imagine that the stress of losing an owner or being relocated to a new home with a new owner could have biological effects on the dogs. We absolutely know that that kind of stress has biological effects on people. And so we may actually identify important changes in the health of dogs that are associated with those kinds of major life events.
This is all just fascinating. Is there anything you would like to add before we close?
I think the one thing that I would add is sort of a big picture idea, which is that this approach of trying to understand the biology of aging is very different from the traditional way that we have thought about medicine, both in human medicine and veterinary medicine. So traditional medical approaches are really focused on individual diseases. And in general, we wait until a person or a dog is sick with a particular disease before we try to do anything about it. And then the focus is really on either treating the symptoms or trying to cure the disease. By approaching aging, the biology of aging directly, I believe that this is a much more efficient and ultimately effective approach than the traditional disease-specific approach. Because if you think about, you know, most of the diseases that lead to death and disability, again, whether that's in pet dogs or in people, they are all age associated in the sense that the greatest risk factor for cancer, diabetes, heart disease, arthritis is age. If we can understand the biological mechanisms of aging, I think we have a real opportunity to push those diseases and disabilities of aging back later into life to really expand the healthy period of life, which is a concept that we refer to health span. And that's really the ultimate goal, is to be able to take the knowledge that we gain from studying the aging process to maximize health span or maximize that healthy period of life.
I just want to wrap up and make sure that I understand the process. So if someone's interested, they go to your website, dogagingproject.org.
Org.
Okay. And they push the purple button and they nominate their dog. And if they're chosen to be a participant, then there would be a form, a fairly extensive form to fill out.
So first of all, let me stop you there. Everybody is chosen to be a participant. We want everybody to participate. So everybody who completes the nomination form will be asked to create an owner portal, which is their own specific place in the website with their own password, and complete the health and life experiences survey. For right now, there's a few weeks delay from when the nomination form is submitted to when people get the invitation to come create their portal and complete the health and life experiences survey. In the future, that will happen instantaneously. But for right now, there may be a few weeks delay. But everybody who nominates a dog will be invited to join the pack. And in order to join the pack, they need to complete the health and life experiences survey.
Okay. And so if I understand it right, that survey takes maybe like an hour to complete?
It'll depend on the person, but yeah, that's a reasonable estimate. So depending on the answers that you give, sometimes there are more extensive questions. But right now, I think there are, Harmony, correct me if I'm wrong, I think there are 10 modules. Some of them are just a few questions. Some of them are up to 20 or 25 questions in a module. But yeah, I would say an hour to 2 hours at the outside, depending on if you have to go find information or sometimes people like to finish one module and then save their progress and come back in a later time and complete the next module. But total time, it's probably an hour to 2 hours.
Okay. I'm trying to get an idea of time commitment if someone were to want to do this. And so from there, then it would be like a yearly update via email?
Right. So you're in the pack. Once you've completed the HLES, you will be asked to provide a veterinary electronic medical record if you're able to do that. Most vets these days are on electronic systems. So I think for most owners that's feasible. If the owners are able, if they're unable to provide an electronic medical record, they're still part of the pack and they will be asked annually to update HLES. That should be pretty quick for most owners because most of the time there's not major life changes from one year to the next. owners in the pack will also sometimes be asked to complete additional surveys. Sometimes those will be fun things, you know, like, you know, does your dog like to chase birds or something like that. Sometimes it'll be a little bit more scientific driven. So one of the surveys that we are very interested in is a cognitive assessment survey. So many people don't realize this, but dogs get dementia with aging very much like humans do. Not all dogs get dementia, but somewhere between 15 and 30% of dogs will develop canine cognitive dysfunction. And so we have a survey-based mechanism for assessing cognitive decline in dogs, which is probably at a biological level, very similar to Alzheimer's disease. So sometimes there will be surveys like that that are in addition to the HLES. People are never required to complete those surveys. So once you're in the pack, you're not going to be kicked out if you don't have time to complete the cognitive survey or some other survey. But we hope to keep people engaged with additional surveys. So then the other thing to mention is for those owners who are able to send in their veterinary electronic medical records, they will be eligible for some of these other more detailed groups, like the foundation group that will get their genome sequenced, or the precision group that will get their genome sequenced, and also then have other additional medical assays, annual veterinary visits, things like that as part of the study. And then there will also be opportunities to participate in clinical trials. The one that we have planned right now is a clinical trial called TRIAD, which stands for Test of Rapamycin in Aging Dogs. It's a clinical trial.
Could you repeat what TRIAD stands for?
Yeah, TRIAD stands for Test of Rapamycin in Aging Dogs. And it's a double-blind, placebo-controlled clinical trial designed to test whether or not a drug called rapamycin can slow aging in pet dogs. So rapamycin has been shown in every laboratory animal where it's been studied to increase lifespan and delay diseases and declines that go along with aging. And we want to know, does this drug have the same effect in pet dogs? So that's the first clinical trial that is part of the Dog Aging Project. But from a more general sense, owners will be asked when they originally enroll their dog, are you interested in potentially participating in clinical trials? They're not obligated, but they'll be asked if they're interested. And those who select yes will be eligible to potentially be selected for TRIAD or for future clinical trials that may come about.
Oh, my head's swimming.
There's a lot going on. It's a big project.
So again, I just want to let everybody know to go, if they have a dog, to dogagingproject.org and nominate your dog. Well, I want to thank you very much. This has been wonderful. And it's been a lot of fun, which goes right along with my motto.
Right. Yeah. Thank you. It has been fun. I've enjoyed it.
So I went to the website and nominated my dog. I nominated Flicka since she was so eager to join in our conversation. A nomination of your dog involves a 2 to 8 minute survey. Send that in and the project will reply with your personal portal. After you receive your personal portal, you can complete the Health and Life Experience Survey. This survey consists of about 200 questions that collect information about your dog's health, behavior, lifestyle, diet, personality, and much more. There are yearly updates and more if you are eager to participate. It's easy. It's fun. To learn more, visit dogagingproject.org.